Hi everyone, my name is Felipe, I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is December 23rd, 2000, and Midtown Group is my home group, and thank you for asking me to come out and speak. I'm grateful to be here. Honestly, I felt like God recently has really been helping me out, you know, with doing things like this, especially in times when I need it. You know, and it's amazing how this was planned months ago, you know, and honestly, for me recently, it's the perfect thing for me to be doing, you know, and to me, that's God's little, you know, gifts, you know, and for me, but I'm grateful to be here, and I am an alcoholic. I guess I'd like to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, what I'm like today. And for me growing up, I grew up in Virginia, not this far out. I grew up in Annandale. And honestly, I had probably as normal as a childhood as you could have had, you know, for the most part. I mean, my parents did get divorced when I was five, but I mean, I was 5 years old, and that was just, it was normal to me. I mean, it didn't seem like I was deprived of anything, you know, and I know they loved me very much and things, and, but growing up as a kid, I was involved in all kinds of things, and I was involved with sports, I was involved with church, I went to Catholic school from kindergarten to eighth grade, and, I had two first grade years, which, you know, which is fun. And I mean, I was involved in all types of things, and I was a happy little kid, you know, if you looked at me, and if you looked at pictures and of me when I was younger. But honestly, one of my I know looking back, one of the things for me that that stuck out was, you know, through all my through my whole life, I was terrified of people, you know, and that's probably something that everyone deals with. You know what I mean? It's probably growing up, you know, honestly, people may handle it a different way, but that's something probably everyone deals with. But I was terrified of people. I was terrified of what you thought about me, you know. And I didn't know why I was so terrified about what you thought about me. I just really cared about what people thought about me. And as time went on, when it really came time to pick friends, I was not concerned about what the people in, like, math club were doing, or, like, what the people that were, like, at church were thinking about me, you know. I was concerned about people that were, like, throwing rocks through windows or, like, spray painting something. I cared about what they thought about me, you know, and honestly, I don't know why, but I started getting in trouble, and I was just all throughout school, from first grade, yeah, pretty much all throughout school, from first grade on, I really wanted to get people's attention, and my way of doing that was getting in trouble, and being the class clown and things like that, and I started hanging out with my kids in my neighborhood, and people started, you know, doing things that I knew that there was no reason I should have been doing, you know. People started stealing, you know, stealing from stores, stealing from parents or other people, and I saw that, and I took that, and I was like, you know, I don't want people to think I'm scared of this, so I'm going to steal as much as I can, you know, and let everyone know, you know. And people started smoking cigarettes, you know, and so I started smoking cigarettes. People started getting in fights, you know, and I wanted to show everyone I'm not scared of getting in fights, you know. I'll throw the first punch, you know, but I'm terrified of things like that, and all these things, you know. And honestly, when alcohol came along, it was one of those things for me at the time. I knew it was something that I should not have been doing, but I did not want people to think less of me. And so when I started, the way it came up was just, you know, people's, my friends' brothers were, older brothers were drinking and things like that, and I wanted to hang out with them. I wanted to be a cool guy, you know, and I guess peer pressure, or whatever you want to call it. But the thing was, when I first started drinking, my reaction to alcohol from all my friends, I know, was not the same as all my friends that I started drinking with, you know, where probably the first few times that we started drinking, I mean, we had a good time, but I loved it, you know, I really did. I loved just the feeling that it gave me, the not having to worry about things, not having to worry about what people thought about me, if I acted stupid, if I was, you know, I just didn't care, you know, when I was drunk, it just did not matter, you know, and I liked it so much that I, from the beginning, I wanted to do it as much as I can, as soon as possible. And the people that I started drinking with, they were not all, they did not have that same reaction, you know. And so it's at towards, you know, when time went on, you know, I probably really started drinking probably like around 8th grade. I was probably like 12 or 13 years old, or 7th grade. And that was a time where, I mean, I really, with regard to like school and things like that, like when it came down to it, like, you know, go home and do schoolwork or don't go home and drink all day, you know, I would rather just drink, you know. And you know, I'd really, you know, after, you know, very soon thereafter, I really didn't understand why people would go to school. I would really, like, I would skip school and go to someone's house and drink all day, or hang with friends or whatever. And it really baffled me, like, why would you choose to go sit in class? You know what I mean? Like, that's like, you know what I mean? Like, these guys are just losers, you know? And I was, like, off, like, getting chased by the police and stuff, and was the real loser. But I don't know. So eventually, one of the things that I look back at, I sought lower companions, and I know it talks about that. And I didn't think that at the time. I just saw people that wanted to drink, and I also did drugs. But I wanted to hang out with people that were had the same interests that I did. You know, I didn't like this whole hanging out with people that wanted to save some for this weekend or save some for tomorrow. That just made me want to throw things, you know. I didn't want to hang out with people that were just terrified of doing things, you know. I just wanted to not care about anything that was going on and just be able to drink. And so the people that the people that I hung out with were, eventually, or that I started to surround myself with, were pretty terrible people, honestly. I got involved with, you know, I lived in Annandale, I got involved with gangs and a lot of that, you know, a lot of that stuff. Which, honestly, looking back, it's a completely different world from, you know, the life I live today. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's hard to think that that was really the life that I was living. There's no question that it was. I started hanging out with these people and the people these were people that were all about drinking every day, and robbing and stealing and doing whatever they wanted to do, you know. And so that's what I started to get into. And I didn't see my life start to fall apart. I just saw that. I didn't think I had a problem. I just felt like if people could just leave me alone and let me drink, I'd be happy, you know. I don't want to go to school, you know. And everything, I justified everything in my head, every single thing, you know. I would, if I didn't have money, I would either break into people's houses, or I would go down into D.C. and I'd stick people up and you know, I'd stick a gun in someone's face and take their money and take everything they had and and probably traumatize someone, you know. You know, someone did that to me today. I mean, that's just terrible, you know. But I would do that like it was no big deal. And it made total sense. It made total sense. I don't have any money. You know what I mean? And I need a drink, you know. And things like that. And really, everything that was going on, I didn't really see my life start to, you know, really fall apart. I just thought everything I did was, or there was a reason for everything that I was doing. And really, things just started, honestly, you know, for the first few years, I had fun, you know what I mean? I did have fun drinking, you know, and there's no question. But I had so much fun, and I chased that fun, and I threw away everything in my life, and my life started to fall apart, you know, and I didn't want to stop. I wanted to keep having fun, and I would hit moments in my life where I should not have been having fun, you know. I would be in loads of trouble, and I would just think of drinking, you know. One of the things that, I don't share about it too much. I don't speak too much, but one of the things is that when I was drinking, I really turned into just, honestly, a terrible, terrible person, you know. That nothing else mattered, you know. I really, my relationship with my family went to hell, you know. My relationship with women, I really, honestly, my mentality was, I didn't really think that women were even people, you know. I just didn't care, you know, and I mistreated women terribly, you know, with all my friends. And things that were, you know, and I did terrible things. And I would, anyone I came across during the day, I was just a menace, you know. And people didn't know how to react around me, you know. I started getting into trouble at home, and my sister, I have an older brother and an older sister, and they were somewhat normal. Actually, my sister's in AA today, but growing up, people in my house didn't know how to act around me, because they would say the wrong thing to me, and I would just go off the handle, you know. My sister, I got in a fight with her one day, and looking back at it, I understand why. A lot of the fights that I got into at my house, I was not drunk, you know, but I was restless, irritable, and discontent. My sister, everything would get on my nerves, and we got in a fight over the phone or something. And she said the wrong thing to me, and I just punched her as hard as I could, you know. I remember her laying on the floor crying, and then chasing after me with knives. I mean, it was just, and people, I mean, the police would come to my house all the time, you know, and it was just craziness. And I didn't think, I mean, I justified it again, you know. People need to just leave me alone. You know, my brother said the wrong thing to me one day. He wouldn't give me a cigarette. Very big deal. One cigarette, you know. So I just beat the crap out of him, you know. So I couldn't deal at my house. So I would go on the run for days. You know, I pretty much stayed on the streets. And that made sense, you know. There's problems at home. I just want to do what I want to do. So I would stay in the streets, whatever money I had, when it came time to choose, whether pay for food, pay for booze, I'd pay for booze, and I'd figure out the food later, you know. Which I did not think that was a problem. That makes sense, you know. And I would pay for the booze, and I'd be stealing food from 7-Elevens, or I'd be going to my friend's houses, asking them to make me a sandwich or something like that. And I didn't think I was living like a bum. I just thought that, come on, help me out, you know. And so I don't know. And I would go on the run for days. And honestly, it was just crazy, the life that I was living. You know, I would be getting in fights. A lot of the people that I hung out with, we would hang out on the streets all the time. And we just looked like a suspect group of people, you know. You'd see like 12, 13 Spanish people with their heads shaved and bandanas. Cops want to stop you. You know what I mean? Cops want to know what you're doing, you know. And I would get stopped by the police every single day. Every single day. They would stop me, frisk me, take my picture, and try to catch us with something. Someone would get, you know, taken in for something, drunken in public, something, possession, something like that. And I just thought that I don't have problems. If the police could just get off my back, I'd be fine. You know, we're not doing anything. We're not causing any trouble, but, I mean, we were. You know, there was no question, you know, and I would stay on the run for days and sleep wherever I fell and drink as much as I could, you know. That was pretty much the gist of it, you know, my drinking. You know, I just, no matter what was going on, I always found it a good idea to drink. And I did not think I had a problem for a long time. I just thought that my problem was, you know, victim of circumstance, you know. And honestly, you know, there were, you know, for me, throughout my using there, I had a few moments of clarity, kind of like a realization of, you know, what's going on. And I remember one of those was I was on the run for a few days, and I ended up getting caught. And I went home, and my mom's an amazing person. Amazing. I love her very much. She was, you know, very angry. And was like, you know, you can't go anywhere, this, that, and the other. And it was probably like a Saturday afternoon. And I was like, okay, I'm tired. You know, I'll stay. You know, I'm going to stay home. And I remember sitting, it was probably like 2 or 3 o'clock. I remember sitting down in my room, and I probably sat down in my room for 5 minutes. Now, granted, you know, for the past few years, I didn't have a sober day. You know what I mean? I was drinking and using every single day. And I was like, okay, I'm going to relax. And I probably sit there for like 5 minutes. I was like, there is no way I'm going to be able to just sit here and not drink. It's Saturday night, you know. It didn't matter what night it was. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have mattered, but that was my thinking. It's Saturday night. And I remember I was like, you know, I got to go. And I called my friend. I told him to pick me up. My mom saw me walking towards the door. And she was like, what are you doing? She's like, you can't go anywhere. She's like, are you crazy? Do you know how much trouble you're in? And I was like, I don't care. She said, if you leave, I'm going to call the cops. I was like, call the cops. I'm not going to be here when they get here, you know. And then right there, and she was standing in front of the door, you know, it just hit my mom. And she just got on my knees, or she got on her knees and started crying. And she was like, Felipe, why are you doing this? Please stop. Why are you doing this, you know. At that moment, I had a moment of clarity. And it was a moment, you know. I looked at my mom, and nothing in me wanted to ever see my mom cry. I didn't want to see anyone that I loved cry, you know. But I felt like I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? They don't understand. I just want to be able to drink, you know. And she was on her knees crying and begging me to stop doing what I was doing. And it messed me up, you know, but that moment passed really quick. And I was like, I'm not going to just stand here and just talk about this. You know, I got to go. I got to run. I'm a runner, you know. And I remember walking towards the door, And I got close to my mom, and she flinched, like I was going to hit her, like punch her. And that was another thing. I was like, this is just crazy. You know, I would never hit my mom. You know? But I ended up leaving and drinking for days. And pretty much for the most part, I mean, everything in my life at that point was as crazy as could be, you know. My house was not a home to go to. Not a place that I felt safe in. I would stay on the streets and drink and with people that I thought were my friends, but I knew no one cared about me. They just cared about getting their drink, you know. And I was in a world of trouble. And I didn't know what to do. But I wasn't going to change. You know, I mean, what am I going to do? Ask for help or stop? You know, that's crazy. Eventually I got into trouble and I got sent to treatment. I got sent to a few treatment centers. At first I started off an outpatient treatment, ADS type place. And that's where I got introduced to AA. Cause they made us go to AA meetings and get our slip signed. And so I went to, in Falls Church, there's this place called the Unity Club. So I would go to the Unity Club with my friends. I mean, they got in trouble too, you know, or new people that I met. And I would go to these meetings and sit in the back and get my slip signed and really just judge each and every one of you, you know. You guys are a group of people talking about your feelings, talking about the 12 steps on the wall. It's like, what in the world is this? You ain't gonna do for me. You know, it looks like the Ten Commandments. You know what I mean? Come on. That was my thinking, you know. But one of the things that I do remember, even though I was, you know, did not care about the meetings, people did reach out to me. You know, people would come out and shake their hands. You know, and we were an intimidating bunch, I bet, you know. We were not, you could tell that we were not interested in being there. You know, but people, no matter what, they came up to us, shook our hands, gave us their numbers. And I don't know, and I don't remember too much of the meetings. And I really wasn't interested, you know, and I didn't hear much. I knew about AA. Eventually I went back out, and I just got more and more trouble. I mean, it doesn't really vary. Just the things I did just got worse and worse, you know, with the people I was hanging out with, the things that I was doing, you know, the robberies, the bad treatment towards women, towards anyone that I came across, terrible things, you know, and honestly, towards the end of my using, I really felt numb. After all this craziness, and I saw, you know, crazy things. Obviously, people get stabbed, or just crazy things happen. And so when things came up, I just felt numb, you know. Eventually, towards the end of my drinking, one of the things that I try to share about it, I don't know. I mean, just to share my state of mind, you know. At that time, I was not thinking like, I need to stop doing what I'm doing and go to AA. You know, that was nowhere near. That was not in any realm of, you know, thought. I thought that, you know, I remember thinking like, I'm so terrified of people, you know, terrified of what people think about me. And the people that I was hanging out with were terrible people. And I thought that I would feel okay in my own skin if I could just stab someone or shoot someone. Because then people would know I was crazy, you know, and they'd be scared of me. You know, that was my logic, you know what I mean? That's the most ignorant thing, you know, I could think of, you know. I was seconds and inches from that happening, and I'm grateful it didn't, you know. But I was just off the beam. I was just like, I was just a loser, you know. And so pretty much what ended up happening, years before that, I got sent to a few treatment centers. I went to Karen Foundation and this other treatment center, and which introduced me to the idea of staying sober, you know, which it wasn't really an idea before. But I left. I would leave my treatment center, and I didn't do anything different. You know what I mean? I just thought like, now I want to get sober. You know what I mean? So now I'm gonna be sober. You know what I mean? But I didn't do anything different, and I ended up thinking it was a good idea to drink again. You know, and so I didn't know that there really had to be any change. I just thought it was, you know, the good intentions that would get me there. You know, and eventually I woke up one morning, and it was June 26th, 1998. And I woke up, and I had two guys in my room, and these guys were escorts, and they were there to escort me to a treatment center. You know, and my mom walked into my room, and she was like, "This isn't a hotel anymore. I can't see you live like this. I'm sending you away." And I was exhausted. You know, I knew I was just done. You know, so these guys, I mean, they took me away, and I didn't have a fight in me. You know, and I got sent to this treatment center up in New York, upstate New York, and I was there for 2.5 years, which is not normal, you know? You know? It's an 18-month program, you know? And I made it happen, you know? And but I got there, and I stopped drinking. I mean, that June 26th was the last day I took a drink, and in 1998, and I was young, definitely. There's no question. I mean, the craziness and all the stuff that I went through, I knew that I was not the same person I was before, you know. And I knew that if I didn't do something, or if something didn't change, that I was going to end up in jail or dead, you know. No question. There's no question for me today, you know. I know that my thinking is as bad as twisted as, you know, thinking can be, you know. But it's only this program that keeps me on the straight path. And if I wasn't doing this, my thinking would end up thinking a drink is a good idea. And there's no question for me. My end would be jail or death, you know. And so what happened was, I got sent to this treatment center. It was for 2.5 years. And it was also a school, so I did that with my time as well. But really, this treatment center is not Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it doesn't try to say it is. And probably the biggest thing it did for me was, before I got there, going to AA was not an option, you know. And the day I left, I wanted to go to AA to try to get some help. And that is no question for me, probably the biggest thing, you know, like getting me from that point, from the point I was at to that point, to being willing to give AA a shot. I mean, that's a huge deal, you know. And while I was at this treatment center, I mean, they take you through the steps, they make you fill out pamphlets, you know, things like that, which I did, and they were big into prayer, and I got back into prayer and things like that. But really, you know, the main thing it did for me was introducing me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, when I left there, in December 23rd of 2000, and that's my sobriety day. I left there, and I was terrified. You know, the life I lived before was way different than anything that I've ever. You know, I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, I chose to go to school and go to college in Ohio to university, Franciscan University, which is a very, very Catholic school. and I thought that if I go there, I'm not going to get in trouble, you know. And I went there, and one of the things before I left the school, that this one of the people that worked there would always tell me, it would get annoying. He would say, "Mean makers make it. Mean makers make it." You know what I mean? I was like, okay. But he would always say it to me, and it stuck in my head. And so I left treatment, and I went to school in Ohio. You know, and it was in this small town called Steubenville, Ohio. And there were AA meetings there. And really, at first, I didn't know what you did. You know what I mean? I didn't know how I was supposed to live sober, you know. That's not what the treatment center was taught me, you know. I didn't know how you work with a sponsor or things like that. And so when I first got out, I picked and chose what I wanted to do. And I went there with a few people, and the AA meetings were very, very small. You know, I'd go to a meeting one night, and it'd be me and like two other guys, you know, reading the book, which is great. You know, but when you're 19, you know, it's, you kind of want something else, you know, to go on. And so what I would do was, and I didn't have anyone to really bounce this off, because I really wasn't interested. I thought that, I wasn't really interested in other people's opinions for the most part. I thought, I've been in rehab for 2.5 years, and I know what I need. You know what I mean? I've been doing this 24/7, you know? And so I thought that I would go out to, I wanted to go and have fun, and meet people. So I'd go to bars and clubs and pool halls and try to meet women and things like that. And really, when I would go to these bars and stuff, honestly, you know, I would feel a little uncomfortable there, but not too much. You know, honestly, for the most part, I felt okay. You know, I felt fine. The problem came Monday morning, you know, when I would start thinking. When I started seeing, I spent the weekend seeing everyone else drink. I started thinking, if they could drink, what's the big deal? Am I really an alcoholic? You know, and start questioning stuff. And that's really where going to bars and clubs would mess me up. And I started to get crazy. You know, if you can, you know, I'm sure everyone here knows or has experience with or knows of. My first few months, I was not sponsored. I was doing whatever I wanted to do. Chasing instincts, thinking that's what was going to make me happy. So I got as bad as crazy as can be, you know. By the grace of God, for me, honestly, one of my buddies that I got out with, he went to Norfolk, but he ended up meeting people back in Washington from my homeroom. And so I came back home, at this point, I was really flirting with alcohol, really. I was meeting up with old people. You know, I didn't think it was a big deal. Everything, you know, again, you know, maybe this makes sense to me. My friend needs a ride, you know. He so happens to need a ride to pick up drugs, but he does need a ride. You know, I'm doing so great. It's not a big deal. It doesn't bother me anymore. You know, I'm sober, you know, and this, that, and the other. And I was really seconds and inches from going back out. So my friend bumped into our home group. And when I came home, I started going to meetings with them. And And here I went to, you know, there I went to meetings, and I felt a completely different vibe that I felt, that I've ever felt in the meeting. You know, these were people that were active in Alcoholics Anonymous, that you could tell cared about what was going on here. And there were people that were my age, and which really at the time is something that was important to me, you know. And there were people that I could really relate to when I heard share. And these people seemed somewhat okay in their own skin. And I felt like I could fly apart in a million pieces, you know. And I would go to meetings and just constantly, I mean, I could not settle down until a half hour through the meeting, you know. And I'd be constantly, my palms would be sweating, I'd be thinking about what people were thinking about me, you know, and this, that, and the other. And I felt crazy. But these people seemed like they were okay in their own skin. And so I started listening to meetings. And one of the things that, and there were different gifts that I got, you know. I started listening to people, to what they did. And I questioned, you know, like, am I really an alcoholic? Am I not? You know. But I would go to these meetings, and I would relate to people to a T, you know. And these were alcoholics. And I was in an AA meeting, and I'm relating to these people, you know. And that was something that really helped me out, the gift of identification with another alcoholic. And that made me feel okay, like I could come back here. You know, I started, and I would listen to people and to what they, what people suggested or what people shared in meetings, and they said, you know, if you really want to give this a shot, you need to try to do some different things. You know, you need to get a sponsor, get a sobriety day, and get a home group. Yeah. And I was like, okay. You know, and I didn't know the guy I asked to sponsor me. You know, someone just said, ask him. I was like, okay. You know, but he's still my sponsor today. You know, I had a sobriety date, or I changed my sobriety date, because the last day I took a drink was my first day in rehab, which was, you know, which I've met plenty of people that's what they do, you know, but if you, you know, but some time into sobriety, for me, and this is what was only my experience, it drove me crazy, you know. I would think, you know, I did not choose to go to rehab. You know, like, I would have probably drank if I had an opportunity. I just did not have an opportunity. This, that, and the other. My head just starts, you know, starts going. You know, I'd be like, well, man, I'm just going to drink. And then I don't have to question anything. You know, and that's, you know, and then eventually I was like, you know, I changed my sobriety date to the day I left treatment. That was my first day being sober. And the only reason why I didn't want to was just the ego. You know. And that was it. And then I got a home group. And I've had a service position at this home group for the past 7 years, you know. And really at first, this is where I feel like for me that my sobriety really started. But my first few months sober, I really just tried to get to meetings, you know. People said to go to a meeting every day. And I was like, okay. It's not like I had better things to do, you know. I just didn't want to be inconvenienced, but I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. So I would go to meetings every day. And people said, and I heard, and I would just listen to what people said or saw what people were doing, and I would just try to do those things, you know. People who had service positions. And it looked like people that had service positions were like kind of important, you know. And I wanted to be important, you know what I mean. So I started to get service positions, coffee positions, setting up chairs, clean up, you know, things like that. And I really, you know, and looking at those things, I really didn't think, I wouldn't have thought those things would be that big of a deal. But they helped me out so much, you know. So no matter what was going on throughout the day, I was going to be at the meeting at, say, 7 o'clock, you know, and I was going to set up chairs. And I was going to set up chairs with other people. And I would set up chairs, and I would talk to other people, and they would ask me how I was doing. And I would ask them how they were doing. And just that right there, really, I didn't know how big of a deal that was, but it helped me out so much, you know. And my sponsor also at the time, he was really into, really involved in every event that was going on, just everything, you know. And so I just tagged along with him. And I would hear these speakers, amazing speakers, you know, just amazing examples of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it really gave me a lot of hope. But to be honest, I really still had that thinking that in order for me to be happy, I just need to chase my instincts, you know. If I have a girlfriend, then I'll be happy. If I have this much money, then I'll be happy. If I wear these clothes, then I'll be happy. And so that's what I chased, you know. I chased excitement and all those things. And really, my first year was probably just, or two, was a lot of hitting walls with those things, you know, getting them. Seeing it weren't things that made me happy. It actually would drive me more crazy, you know, things like that. And my sponsor is not the type of sponsor that's going to, he is not into making you do things, you know. He'll give me enough rope, you know, just enough, you know, to come crawling back and, you know, ask for help. So with hitting these walls, I mean, I started to try to take some actions because I wanted to feel okay. I wanted to stop feeling crazy. I wanted to feel okay in my own skin. And so I started doing what people were really talking about here, you know. For my first few years, I really got involved with service. And I tried to take some actions besides the steps. And this is just my experience. And I reached a point where, and I remember telling my sponsor, I was like, you know, I feel like I'm taking these actions, but I'm taking them for all the wrong reasons, and this, that, and the other. You know, I want to get service positions so people see me, I'm doing well, this, that, and the other. Just, and my sponsor, he said to me, he said, keep taking the actions. The actions in Alcoholics Anonymous do not care about your petty motives, you know. They work one way or the other, you know. And I was like, okay. And so eventually I started to go through the steps with him. And eventually I started to really trying to change my way of living, you know. Really try to bring these tools into my life, you know. One of the things that I would hear people talking about was when they woke up in the morning, you know. I'd wake up in the morning and just run because I was late, you know, pretty consistently. But people would wake up in the morning. People would talk about waking up in the morning and sitting and reading something out of the big book or something out of, daily reflections or whatnot. And trying to start off their day on the right foot, you know, because they would say, you know, the alcoholic wakes up before you do, you know. And I would try to practice start that, you know. And I would hear people talk about calling people throughout the day and asking and seeing what's going on with other people. And I didn't really think that was a big deal. But when I started to do that, it really got me out of my own head and my own problems. And my sponsor started taking me through the steps, and I did my fourth step, and my fourth and fifth step. And honestly, for me, my fourth and fifth step, I didn't have a burning bush experience. My experience was, and it's probably something that saves the fourth and fifth step is probably something that saved my life. And it was that, it was one of the most honest conversations I've ever had with a human being with regards to myself. And it opened the door of communication where it really did not matter what terrible thing I did. Nothing could top what I've done, you know what I mean? And that door being open has saved me so much throughout my sobriety, you know. If I didn't have the courage to tell him everything that was on my fist up, I don't know if I'd have the courage to tell him my crazy thinking, Dan, you know, throughout my sobriety. And really, you know, throughout my fifth step, I really saw a lot of things about myself, you know, full of fear, really petty, all these things. And, you know, I had, like, my first grade teacher, and she flunked me, and things like that. But, like, you know, like, and I had a lot of, you know, people on there that I really saw how, to me, the word to describe it was just how a terrible person I was, you know, with the things that I did to people. You know, the total disregard to other people's lives or feelings, you know. I would go through my life, like, I would toss people over the shoulder, like the core of an apple. You know what I mean? I would finish, didn't really care, you know, toss them over my shoulder. Did not really care what happened to other people. I just cared about me and my things. And I really, really saw that on my fourth and fifth step. And you know, and after my fifth step, we did the six and seven. You know, we sat down and read the book, and I sat for an hour. And really, it felt like the six and seven step was more of a formality than anything at that point. I did what the book said, and that was it. You know, and that's what I thought. You know, but really, the six and seven step has been. For my time after that was really like, is really where I experienced it, looking back, you know, getting to the point where, you know, we're entirely ready, I've got to remove all these defects of character. I spent the next few years getting ready, you know, and really going back to my sponsor and bringing that up, you know, the six and seven step and these defects and things like that. You know, and I like what I've heard some amazing things on this, you know, meetings, and I do believe that every defect that I came in here with, I still have, you know, and it's not flaring like it was before, but it can still pop up, no question, you know, and what I need to pray for is for, you know, freedom from those defects. Freedom to the point where I could get out of my selfish ass and help another person or alcoholic, you know. When I'm trying to do that, that's when I'm really working, you know, the seventh step, I feel like. And I did the eighth and ninth with my sponsor, and really the eighth step was, you know, mainly for the majority of all the people that were on my fourth step. And most of the people on my eighth step, they were not people that I could go back to. And, you know, some of the things that I did, there were a lot of things that I could not go back and make amends to. And I've talked to my sponsor about it. And there are things that I try to do for them with regards to money and things like that, pay money back. And really, my suggestion, or my experience with the A step, is it's something to go over with a sponsor. It's not something for me to do on my own. Right before I met my home group, I tried to do this on my own, you know? And I called my ex girlfriend, you know, to make amends, you know? Show her how great I was doing. And it probably could not have been a worse thing for me to do than to call her, meet up with her, bring up all these terrible things I did, and really not do anything different about it or try to do anything different about it besides just bringing them up to her and just kind of walking away, you know, so I feel okay, you know. That's probably the worst thing I could have done. And, you know, and so my eighth and ninth step is something for me and my sponsor to really go through together. And, you know, and I have made some amends, and I still owe some amends. And I actually, this past week, like I said at the beginning, man, still gifts of, you know, little gifts from God. I was asked to lead a meeting this past week, which is basically a nine step meeting. It's on the promises. And, but, you know, just a week ago, I was feeling pretty, I don't know what happened or whatever, but I was really thinking about my mom, you know, and really thinking about, you know, we're getting older, and, you know, if my mom were to pass away, would I feel okay in my own skin about our relationship, you know, and there was no question. I felt like, no, you know, no. And last week I was just feeling terrible about that, because I love my mom so much. And I was like, what is wrong? I'm just so selfish, you know, like, you know, all she wants is my time, you know, but I'm just too busy a lot of times. I'll just say, I'm busy, you know, I'm working, you know, this, that, and the other. And my mom is so amazing, you know, when I'm around her, I love it, you know. And so I led, you know, I led this meeting this past week, and that's what I shared about, honestly. And, you know, I met up with her this week, and really that's my goal is to, you know, I was talking to her some this week, we sat down for coffee, and I was just telling her, you know, I was like, thank you so much for everything that you've done for me, you know, it's everything that you've done is a huge deal, and she was just saying, she just wants me to be happy and wants me to be a part of her life, you know. And so that's really my, right at this point in my life, with regards to that, and with my relationship with her, is really to be a part of her life, you know. And now with regards to the other steps, with 10, 11, 12, with regards to the 10th step, the 10, 11, 12, honestly, for me, are steps that, if I'm interested in growing here and really staying here, are steps that if I'm not doing and practicing, then there's no question that I'm gonna write my own ticket out of here. You know, and continue to take personal inventory. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I hate admitting that I'm wrong, you know. And, my first reaction in any situation is that you're wrong, and then I'm right, you know. And it usually will take me a little bit to come to my senses about it. But really, with regards to the 10th step, I try to keep an open dialogue with what's going on with me, with my sponsor, and tell him what's going on. And my day-to-day, I mean, I really try to, for the most part, I need to try to be nice, you know, and if I do something wrong, that I need to fess up for it or make it right then and there. And with regards to the 11th step, with regards to the 11th step, my experience with my relationship with my higher power, you know, it's just been so, you know, over the years, it's just been so crazy, honestly, you know. When I went to that treatment center, it really got you back into church, and that was their, you know, that was their thing, like in church and prayer and things like that, and I really got into it there, you know, and this was for a few years. Got into prayer, I started, you know, getting involved with Mass and Altar Boy, you know, things like that, just like crazy. Really into it. I went to Franciscan University. And then after a while, I started, really, I was like, I can't do this, you know. I was like, I'm an alcoholic, you know, this and that. Like, I don't believe in certain things that I shouldn't be doing, you know, and things like that, you know, to a certain degree, I guess. And so I really kind of brushed it off, you know, my relationship. That was my connection, or my thinking was, it was through church and things like that. And when I came, and the more time I, and then when I came to AA, I really saw that people, or the people that I hung out with, they were not like going to church every day, you know. But there was no question you could see that they had a relationship with a higher power. And really recently, in the past few years, it's really that, you know, that my relationship, my own personal relationship with my God, as I understand Him, is really what I've been trying to work on. And it's not like, you know, I'm not, there's no question, I'm not like a constantly having faith in God, you know. You know, I don't think like whenever something bad goes on, you know, God's going to just make this work wonderfully and, you know, this is God's plan or... but there are days that I do think that, you know, and, you know, I do really believe that God's got a plan, you know, and that's really what I've been trying to just get closer to, you know, and, as regards to the 12 step, there's no question to me that I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. The person that I came in here, like, is completely different than the person I am today, you know. And, honestly, I felt like I was an animal before, you know. And I lived like an animal. And the person I am today, I mean, I don't think I'm anyone special. But I think I'm, I feel like I'm okay, you know. And with carrying the message to other alcoholics, that's something that I try to do in my life. There are things that I've tried to do, like going to institutions. And, you know, I go to an institution all the time and share my story. And most importantly, I think the most important thing that I could be doing, and I try to do, is just reaching out to someone, and really just trying to give up my time to other alcoholics. You know, I'm so selfish with my time. You know, my time is me time. You know, but when I am sitting at a meeting and talking to someone, it doesn't have to be at a meeting, but at all. But when I am sitting and talking to another alcoholic about what's going on with them, and or my experience, or someone that's newly trying to get sober and terrified and does not know what to do, honestly, that's the not to have not that it should be a selfish thing, but it's one of the best feelings that I can get, you know. And I don't know, and it's definitely a part of my life, you know, and so I don't know, and today, I honestly feel like, I'm grateful, I'm really grateful that, I get asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful that, of my life today, there's no question for me, there's no question that Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. If I did not have this in my life, I don't know how things would have turned out. I just could not imagine, you know. But they'd be miserable, you know, if I was still alive. And I hope I can continue to remember that, you know. And that the practice of these principles in my day-to-day living is really what makes my life, and it's not the things in my life, you know. And so, that's pretty much it for me, and I really thank you guys for letting me come out and share my story. Thanks for letting me share.